This is a recording from the Jefferson Literary and Debating Society, brought to you by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Find out more about what we do at sevillepodcast.com. W. Haywood Fralin, Rector, Board of Visitors of the University of Virginia, gave a State of the University address to members of the Jefferson Society on October 31, 2008. Mr. Fralin revisited his undergraduate experience of 50 years ago before outlining the board's long-range plan for the university. He then took questions from the audience.
Thank you all so much for coming here tonight. Thank you especially for those who brought their costumes to the traditional nature of the hall. I'm incredibly pleased and proud to present Mr. Haywood Fralin, another addition to this semester's roster of the speaker series. Mr. Fralin is the rector of the university, a member of the University Board of Visitors, and a proud graduate of the University of Virginia. And without further ado, I present to you all Mr. Haywood Fralin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just before coming, went over to Auburn Library to use the facilities, and I must admit that this crowd is a little more active than that crowd over there. You remind me much more of the ones I used to hang around with when I was here. I know you want to hear about what the university, the Board of Visitors' perspective is on the university, and you want to hear about the Board of Visitors' view of the future of the university. But before we do that, I thought it might be fun to compare the university to the university in 1958, 50 years ago, and talk about a little bit what has changed and what it was like at that time. And unfortunately, I was here. You know, there have been a lot of traditions at the university that we've lost. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a fact. When I was here in 1958, the men wore coats and ties to classes. You would not dare walk across the lawn or any other grassy areas. And that is very different the way it is today. Everyone is very casually dressed today. Students have picnics on the lawn, particularly on football weekends, and I think that's probably a pretty good thing. And then there are some traditions that have remained. We still refer to the grounds and not to the campus. We refer to Mr. Jefferson in the present tense. Only in Charlottesville do we do that. And the honor system is still a major component of this university. Now, I would tell you that in 1958, no one in my class had ever heard of marijuana. Driving under the influence of alcohol was not part of the penal code. And that's probably a good thing at that time as well. Dwight Eisenhower was president of the United States. Nikita Khrushchev was the premier of the Soviet Union. In that year, we launched the first satellite in the United States. And that's the year that our troubles with Iraq began. Because in 1958, King Faisal II, who was the king of Iraq at the time, was assassinated, leading to a number of dictatorships and ultimately to the dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. Fidel Castro still was not leader of Cuba, and the U.S. consisted of only 48 states. At the University, Colgate Darden was president. Classes began on September the 16th, as compared to this past year, I believe it was August the 28th. The exams ended on June the 5th, which seems like forever today, as compared to May 9th last year. Tuition in 1958 for an in-state student was $294. For an out-of-state student, it was $689. And that compares to $8,500 and $27,750 today, respectively. Room and board and other expenses in 1958 totaled about $1,000. Today, that number is approximately $10,000. In 1958, there were 3,100 undergraduates at the university, of which about half, just a little over half, were enrolled in the College of Arts and Sciences. In addition to that, there were about 1,500 graduate students at the university. Today, there are over 13,600 undergraduate students, of which 10,100 are enrolled in the College of Arts and Sciences, and there are just under 6,600 graduate students at the university. Of the few women enrolled in the university at that time, almost all were enrolled in the School of Nursing. Today, 56% of the entering class are female, and by the year 2012, over half of the living alumni will be women. The budget, excluding the medical center in 1958, was $8.5 million. Today, the operating budget is $1.2 billion. And this is a very, very important statistic. In 1958, the Commonwealth of Virginia allocated 40% of the university's operating budget. Today, that number is 12%, and if you include the medical center complex, that number would be reduced to 8%. Now, the governor has announced that there will be additional cuts, and he has allocated these cuts to various components of the governing of the government, and that component that's allocated to higher education will reduce our number by another percent, the percentage of allocation of state funds to the university. He has also announced that there is an additional $1 billion shortfall that will be addressed in January. If the higher education component of government is again required to experience funding reductions, we expect that number will be reduced by another percent, so that at that time it is very likely that the university will be receiving a 6% allocation from the Commonwealth of Virginia. The good news about that is it's hard to cut zero. Whenever we get there, that probably will be the bottom. In 1958, there was no Newcomb Hall and no University Hall. We played basketball in a 3,000-seat memorial gymnasium as compared to the ultra-modern 15,000-seat John Paul Jones Arena today. We played football in a 25,000-seat Scott Stadium as compared to what I think is the most beautiful stadium in the country. Not the biggest, but certainly one of the most beautiful, if not the 62,000-seat Carl Smith Complex. At Winter's Weekend in 1958, the concert featured the Kingston Trio in Mem Gym. The university, talking a little more, bringing things up to today. The university is governed by a 16-member board of visitors, all appointed by the governor for a 4-year term, all subject to one reappointment, and all confirmed by the General Assembly. In addition, there is one ex officio member, which is a student member. That current representative is someone that maybe many of you know, Adam Getachew, who's doing a very fine job. The Virginia statutes require that 13 members of the appointments made by the governor be residents of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and they further require that one member be a medical doctor. Because of this very stringent state requirement, residency requirement, unfortunately, there's little opportunity for a lot of interested and strong supporters of the university to ever have an opportunity to serve on the Board of Visitors. So recently, the university, for several reasons, has endeavored to update its memorandum of understanding between the board and the 16 fundraising-related foundations at the university. We're very different from other universities. In most universities, there's one fundraising foundation. The University of Virginia has numerous ones. And in so doing, we have created, in updating this memorandum, a council of chairs, which has a representative from each of the foundations. And the effort in doing this is to create a better dialogue among the university administrative officials, the Board of Visitors, and each of the independent foundations. The goal is to have more input, to have more individuals provide a better input to the university, and to have a better mechanism for articulating the university core values. You know, sometimes our foundations have been going a little bit different direction from what the university has been headed, and it's very, very important, I think, for all of us to be operating on the same page. And that's, so far, the memorandum is working very well. In this effort, three members of the Council of Foundations, as selected by the Council, will each serve on a different committee of the Board of Visitors, and they are currently serving at this time on a committee of the Board of Visitors. This provides much more opportunity for many of the alumni and supporters of the university to be involved in the decisions that affect the future of the university. As you might expect, one of the very most important functions and operations that endeavors that the University Board of Visitors engages in is the development of the university's long-range plan. It's not only important here, it's important at every university. We all know that we have limited resources. We do not have an open checkbook. And therefore, we have to focus on the utilization of those resources in a fashion that will raise the university to the next level and make us the very best that we can be. To that end, President Castine, a year ago, formed the Commission on the Future of the University. It is co-chaired by Tim Garson, who is the provost of the university, and Leonard Sandridge, who is the chief executive officer of the university. And it's been given the responsibility to work with the Board of Visitors to establish these priorities. We received a preliminary report in September. We will get the final report near the end of the next semester. But I can tell you they will focus on three areas, and I hope that these are areas that will be of interest to you, and you will agree that these are areas we need to focus. The first area is the student experience. Advising will be stronger. There will be more focus outside the university. There will be more research. There will be more study abroad, and there will be more programs like the Semester at Sea. There will be an elective Jefferson Public Leadership Program, with research as a component that will team students and professors with leadership programs outside the university grounds. The second area of focus will be on the areas of science, technology, and engineering. Globally, universities are ranked by their research component, and sadly, I must tell you that right now the university does not rank very high. We will focus on the areas where we are the strongest, with increased faculty support, more space, more equipment, and much more support for graduate students. These research areas include a lot of areas, but I'll just give you a couple of areas that we're very strong. Morphogenesis and the immune system, particularly diabetes. But we won't forget the humanities, where we've always been strong. We will have a School of Public Health. But the third focus will be in the area of global studies, preparing our students for the global economy that we all know now exists. On the grounds, there will be more global students and more global faculty. Away from the grounds, our students will be given more opportunities to immerse themselves in foreign cultures. You may or may not know that no new schools have been added to the university in over 50 years. That changed this fall. The new Batten School of Leadership and Public Policy became the newest addition with the opening of classes this fall. This school will both focus on both service leadership and entrepreneurial leadership, and it will have interdisciplinary programs that will involve cooperation among the Batten School, the college, the Darden School, the Law School, the Engineering School, and the Medical School. In addition to that, there will be an Institute for the Environment. So as you can see, this focus clearly recognizes that the College of Arts and Sciences is the heart and soul of this university. It always has been, and it always will be. No matter how great the professionals and other schools, and we have some terrific professional schools and other schools, the reputation and the success of this university will be mainly determined by the effectiveness and the reputation of the college. In the past, we have developed good long-range plans. This, too, will be a very good long-range plan. The difference this time is that we are determined to see to it that we measure the implementation of the plan. What gets measured gets done. We are requiring that a component of the plan will be measurements providing a scorecard for its implementation, so that there will be reports annually to the Board of Visitors of the success of the implementation of the plan. It goes without saying that an implementation of any plan requires significant dollars, and that's where the capital campaign becomes a significant factor. The Commonwealth of Virginia, as we talked about earlier, has clearly demonstrated that funding for higher education will continue to be reduced. So our goal in this capital campaign, and at the time it was announced, it was the largest goal ever announced by any university in the country, Harvard, Yale, you name it. It was the largest goal. It was $3 billion. We are now at a point in the timeline that 60% of the time has passed. We have raised $1.8 billion. Even though we are experiencing a very, very significant downturn in the economy, and I'm sure you, as all soon-to-be graduates, are very concerned about that. We're concerned about that in the capital campaign as well, but we're confident that we will raise the $3 billion. I would tell you that it's important to point out in this capital campaign, as with any capital campaign, most of the dollars are donated for restricted or specific uses. The greatest need at the university, however, is for a much larger unrestricted endowment, which would allow the university the flexibility to fund the most critical needs of the university. So that's a challenge for us. We're working very hard on trying to develop that larger unrestricted endowment. Recent research shows that 88% of the alumni, and that's an incredible number, 88% of the alumni at the university report that they had a very favorable experience at the university, that they would like to volunteer to the university after, if contacted, and that they would like to contribute to the university. However, our annual giving numbers are not what you would think they might be with a number like 88% approval. Currently, approximately 30% of our alumni give to the university. That is not a great number when we compare a lot of the more successful universities, the most successful of which is Princeton, which has an over 60% annual giving rate by its alumni. So we got to do a much better job of communicating with our alumni and encouraging them to give back to the university. There have been a lot of recent successes at the university. An endowment is in place to maintain the Kluge gift properties, which are the properties out near Monticello. And we are currently studying what would be the most effective use of that property for the university. Restructuring is in place. This is a bill passed by the General Assembly 2 years ago, which allows the university much more flexibility without Richmond oversight. The major component of that bill is that it gives the university control over its tuition. For the first time ever, a maintenance reserve is in place for most of the buildings at the university. Access UVA, which is the program that allows any qualified Virginia student to enter the university regardless of their financial resources, is working extremely well. Diversity at all levels, student body, faculty, employees, is the best that it's ever been. Have a long way to go, but it is improving, and we will continue to drive diversity at this university. The graduation rate for black students at the university is the highest of any public college in the nation, far exceeding the university in second place. UVMCO, which is an acronym for University of Virginia Investment Management Company, is a roaring success. It's a company that was set up to handle the university investments. It was set up approximately 4 years ago. Last year, it returned a 25% return to the university. Needless to say, over the last 3 months, we have had some challenges. Alumni engagement is now a joint effort between the Alumni Association and the University Development Office, and it's the best that it's ever been. So as you can see, the university is alive and well. It's getting better every day. But when you step back and you think about it, with the Jefferson tradition, with the lawn, with the history, and with the love of the alumni, isn't that really what we all expect? So with that, let me open it up to you. And I promise I will take soft questions, reserve the right to pass on hard ones. And we'll talk about some of the things that you might be interested in talking about. Who wants to be first? Yes, sir. Yeah. I like some of the costumes. I don't think we're changing our competitors because we have a list of universities that we call competitor universities that we compare ourselves to, and they include some pretty fine institutions like University of Pennsylvania, like Duke. Cornell is in the mix. Don't hold me to all of them. I'm not sure I can remember. Vanderbilt is in the mix. So we have some pretty prominent universities that we compare ourselves with today. And so no matter how successful we are, I don't see that changing because I think that if we compete effectively with those universities, I think we'll all be proud of where we are. Yes?
Mr. Fraylin, thank you so much again for coming.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Well, sometimes it's hard to remember back that far, but I would say this. I was in Dabney. Dabney's the one right beside Bonnycastle. And I can remember the first day I was here, probably like most first-year students, scared to death, wondering if I was going to be able to compete with all the really bright students at the university. And at that time, I think probably more so than today, the fraternity life was a major part of the university. So there were a lot of people who were recruiting students, and that process began fairly early at the university. I don't sense that that's the case today, and that it's as much a part of the university life as it probably was back then. I would say that quickly you form friends that are in your dorm, and they become people that you share your experiences with, and they give you comfort when you talk about your problems, and you provide them comfort when they talk about theirs, and those are friendships that you find will last, or did at least in my case, throughout the university experience. Even though you go in different directions, you join different fraternities, you become interested in different areas of interest. You tend to form those friendships, and when you come back to the university, I probably see and socialize more with those friends than with the people who actually were in the fraternity that I was in when I was here at the university. So I think those relationships are critical. And I'm always interested in the experiences that first-year students are having at the university because I think it's a major factor in stabilizing that first difficult year that you have here, and forming those relationships and those bonds are critical. Yeah.
Thank you very much. One of the things that Dr. Week we've been talking a lot about is kind of the rise of social networking and all these electronic ways to keep in communication. And one of the things that we've also noticed is that we're creating a lot of communities that seem to be in some ways militating against real communion, that really connecting to people. So we'll call something a community where you don't actually really connect with somebody. Do you feel like that's really happening, sort of, have you observed that people are being pulled in different directions and are making less deep relationships with other people? And if so, is there a university here to play a role in kind of making that community stronger?
Well, I think this part of this problem with academic advising that we talked about earlier is something that we really need to focus on because, you know, we all come from very different backgrounds. Some of us attended very strong public high schools. Some of us did not attend quite so strong public high schools. So it is really important for us to consider those differences. So, I really worry, getting more to your point of your question, I really worry about the university as it increases the size because it becomes a lot more difficult when the size increases to develop the community and the sense of everybody being part of something that all of us feel very passionate about. And all of a sudden, you find a group here and a group here and a group here, and they don't communicate as effectively and as much as you'd like. So I do worry about that. We do face pressures with the General Assembly about the number of students that we allow to enroll at the university. We are a public university, and so we experience those pressures on a frequent basis, and there is a lot of pressure for the university to grow larger. I think we've done a fairly decent job of resisting that pressure, as well as resisting the pressure to take more in-state students and not maintain the one-third, two-thirds in-state, out-of-state balance that we've had for a number of years. I don't see that changing. I think there would be a lot of resistance at the university changing that, and we're going to continue to fight very hard to try to control the size of the university. But it is helpful for people like you to let us know if there are things that are not working. I mean, this academic advising, we're hearing that it's not working. That's why we're talking about it. That's why we need to improve it. Yeah. Yeah, I think what the answer to your question relies in the definition of public. Some people view public as controlled by the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's not what I think of when I think of public. When I think of public, I think of access to anyone, regardless of financial resources, that has the capability of entering this university. And we need to make sure that we provide the resources and the scholarships that people can do that if they are qualified to attend the university. So I don't ever think that we will lose the public image and become a private university and become private in the sense that a Harvard or Yale or the Ivy League schools or some others that you can name probably better than I. But I do believe that we will continue to strive to raise the level of the university. We need to be the best that we can be. And there are some things that we do extremely well. There are some things that we don't do as well as others. And if we don't, we need to improve it. So I think the answer to your question lies in the definition of public. We want to be accessible for qualified students. We want to maintain that two-thirds, one-third ratio in-state, out-of-state student. But we also want to be able to compete, and we want to be as qualified and as good a university as anybody else that you could name, Ivy League or otherwise. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming.
I'm happy to be here. I don't think we'll ever be all things to all people, and I think we need to focus on the areas where we are the strongest and where we can be the strongest and where we can make an impact. And to that end, we need to fund the graduate students to the level that our competitors fund the graduate students. We are not doing that today, and it is affecting our graduate program, and we cannot continue to do that. It is affecting the research dollars that are coming to the university. As I said earlier, unfortunately, globally, universities are ranked by their research component. We don't rank very well, and that ought to tell us something. If we don't rank very well, there's a reason why we don't. The number that I believe is a correct number of our shortfall for supporting graduate funding is about $200 million. We need a $200 million to additionally fund endowment to additionally fund the graduate program at the university. But this is not something that ought to be spread out equally among all of the schools. We have to focus on the area where we are effective and where we do the best job. Yeah. You know, I would, when you look at most of the teachings and the writings of Thomas Jefferson, it's pretty hard to argue with most of it. I think he had it right most of the time. And I don't see us getting very far away from the Jefferson concept. That doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of areas where we can focus that we're never contemplated in the Jefferson era. Information technology, you know, that's an area that is a major, major component of universities today. That is an area where we will focus significant dollars, and it's something that we just have to be. I can't visualize any university being the best of the best without significant information technology component. So I think that with the basic Jefferson concept about education, I think we will pretty much always follow. Always is a long time, at least for the next 4 years. after that, you know, I think that we have to bring those thoughts to the modern day actual happenings in the world. What's happening today needs to be viewed in terms of his thoughts in a very different period of time. Like your mask.
I am a graduate student in the School of Engineering.
Uh-huh.
I have also attended here in undergrad, and I've seen sort of now on the other side some sacrifices made by professors and at least my department, mechanical engineering in particular, in the area of undergraduate education, that the idea of
I can't tell you the number of conversations that we've had at the Board of Visitors level in dealing with the long-range plan, talking about the basic math and science component of the university. And I would tell you, I don't want to speak for the whole board, but one person's opinion that it has been inadequate and unsatisfactory, and that we have to do a better job if we're going to be viewed as one of the top universities in the country with our math and science component at the basic level. And I'm talking about undergraduate level. So I agree with what you're saying. It has to be done. We've got to be better. Yeah.
Thank you very much for given the strong goodwill among the alumni, why do you think that it is a relatively low giving rate? And do you think a component of that is the fact that there's this perception that it's getting state money, what do we need to do? We don't really have
I don't think it's a perception that we're getting state money, because I think that there's a pretty common knowledge throughout that the state funding has been reduced significantly. I think we haven't done a very good job of asking. I don't think we've done a very good job of involving our alumni. And I think if we do a better job, we will see significantly better percentages. Most people don't think, well, I need to call the university up and give them some money. Somebody needs to call them, contact them, get them involved in what's happening at the university and ask them to contribute. And in most instances, I think the results will be extremely satisfactory. And we're beginning to focus on this. We have never, ever at the university really focused on annual giving. And we've had a lot of focus on capital campaigns, but not really on annual giving. And we're going to start doing a much, much better job of that, and I think it will produce a lot of dividends down the road. Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming. Just to keep going with this idea of the relationship between us and the Commonwealth, what can you maybe explain a little bit more about how exactly members of the state government influence the long-term plans of the university and what their dollars are buying them as far as the strategic vision of the university and maybe how you see that changing over time as we're getting fewer and fewer dollars?
Gosh, I don't want to be biased because I stand here as someone that frequently walks the halls of the General Assembly. I am there on a fairly regular basis and in the governor's office on a fairly regular basis seeking funding for higher education. We had a number of us very involved in the last bond effort, which is the most successful bond effort ever in the history of higher education in Virginia, and the only reason that Cabell Hall is going to be renovated to the tune of $80 million. So that is extremely significant for the university, but I really don't think that the General Assembly has a lot of influence on the long-range plan. I think that the university is to the point where it is it's important to receive the state funding. The state funding prior to the last cut was $160 million, not a little amount of money, but it's a $1.2 billion budget. And with the cuts that the $12 million in cuts that we just have been told about, it's sort of hard to put very much reliance on the General Assembly. And so I think the approach has been, you know, we want to cooperate with the General Assembly. We want to do everything we can to make this university the best that it can be. But it's really involves us going to Richmond and, I don't know how to put it any other way, begging for money, because that's what we do. We go to Richmond and we beg for money. And generally, we get far fewer dollars than we ask for. And generally, our pleas fall on unsympathetic ears. Members of the General Assembly, all politicians, I'm a little cynical right now, all politicians are thinking about their reelection. And higher education is not a sexy issue in the voting public. Yeah.
Just a follow-up question. obviously, is that even though we don't have the same type of research muscle, say, Michigan or like some of our other public schools, we still do have a smaller student faculty ratio. We have a lot of the advantages of
right.
private schools.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. As a matter of fact, that is one of the elements of the Batten new leadership in public policy school, because that is going to involve interdisciplinary programs among a whole series of components of the university and get more people involved. And, you know, it's probably hard for you to visualize as a student, but every person in this room is a significant future leader, not only of this university, but throughout the world. You will become major factors throughout the world. And so we believe it's our responsibility to prepare you to be leaders. And we think that we can do as good or better job than any other university. In fact, we hear time and time and time again from major corporations in the country. You know the difference between the university students and students that come from some of the other schools and some very elite Ivy League schools? The university students are ready to be leaders, and we welcome them. Two more questions. All right, these two hands right here. Yeah.
We'll often refer to Darden as just Darden, and then we'll say the University of Virginia, Darden. University of Virginia never gets mentioned. I wonder, you know, we've got a new logo and there's a UVA right on the bottom there, but a lot of Darden students, they live in North Grounds, they go to school in North Grounds, and never come down here, never get involved, and it's just sort of, it's just a fact of life that that's kind of Darden and this is.
Right. Pretty building, though.
It's great. Love it up there.
Not having ever attended a Darden school, I'm not sure that I'm the best person to try to answer that, but I would offer two observations. First of all, and I do hear this from a number of people that attend, you are very, very busy, particularly that first year. And so you have very little time to be involved in much of anything other than making sure you get the work done and you're not embarrassed the next day. I think that has a lot to do with it, because I think our sense of urgency changes once we get at the graduate level. We are thinking in terms, you know, I got to get with it. I got to get a job. I have to make something happen here. I can't decide. I mean, my most important thing is not what I'm going to be doing Friday night. It's going to be what I'm going to be doing a year from now. And so I think the focus is a little bit different, which makes a difference. Geography clearly has some importance in that factor of people tending to stay on the North Grounds. But I would say this to you. When you look at most universities, while we get used to the thinking that it's a long way away, it's really, compared to most universities, very close. I remember when we built the Fontaine Research Park on Fontaine Avenue, we had a hard time getting any of the medical researchers to go to Fontaine Park. It was too far away. Now, they all want to go to Fontaine Park because North Fork, which is out on 29, is really a long way away. And so it's all a matter of perspective, I think. And hopefully we'll be able to change that. I also think as the university by necessity has more buildings, more research buildings, more, well, you get a new Batten School, for example, that requires a building. We own what's called the Faulkner property, which is the 250 West, the large White House sitting on top of a hill on a farm area. And if you could visualize a bridge across the 29 bypass connecting that, I mean, you really have an area that is pretty central for all of the university. I mean, obviously, that's a long way down the road, but if you think in terms of 25 or 30 years, I'm not sure that the North Grounds will be viewed as really distant. I'm told you're the last one.
That's what they say. One of the things that's so central here is the honor system.
Yeah.
And one of the tenets of that is the single sanction. And it's been up for debate in recent years, and obviously to those folks who think it to be changed and those of us who think it's an important part of the system of the university. And I was just curious about your thoughts on it and your opinions.
I think it's one of the distinguishing factors of this university from other universities. And, you know, it very much is based in the Thomas Jefferson thought process that students should be allowed to govern themselves. That is an important component of this university, far more so than most universities. I would also tell you that I probably get as many emails on this topic as any other topic. I have one that's hot off the press right now involving the honor system and the single sanction and the fairness of the system. I don't think we'll ever devise a perfect system. I am confident that every person who comes to this university is well advised of the honor system and what its ramifications are at the university. And so I guess I would I may say the same thing about the honor system that I think it was Winston Churchill said about democracy. It's the worst system that was ever devised, except for all the others that we know. And so, you know, I know there are problems and that there are issues with the honor system, but I think that it is a major component of this university that has served the university well. And I would also tell you that in 1958, that honor system was much more stringent and much more strictly followed in terms of the single sanction than it is today. Not saying that's better or worse, but that is... Yeah, I hope I dodged that artfully. No, I really must believe in the honor system. I think it's a good thing for the university. And I would say that I do not know of a single Board of Visitors member that feels differently about that. Okay, thank you all. Thank you. Yeah.